Our speaker is Sunny from Alhambra.
Hello, my name is Sunny. For those of you who don't know, Bob L., who was supposed to be the speaker for tonight, is in the hospital. And his daughter, Barbara, sends us, the regards. So I'm here on his behalf and doing it by default to be the guest speaker for tonight.
Yay!
I believe that it was one of the luckiest moments that I was chosen to be in Al-Anon because I needed to be able to identify and just change my self-destructive thinking because it has not taken me anywhere. What happened that brought me into these rooms is that my thoughts were completely insane. I wanted to commit suicide after my mother passed away 4 years ago, and I wanted my father to stop drinking so he could realize that how unfit father as well as an unfit husband he was, and how much that he has caused all of this misery in the family, as I thought beforehand. It wasn't easy for me to just open up and share about myself, because in the family, it's just too many secrets. As I thought before, but after coming to these rooms, just meeting so many self-honest people and people who are really trying to improve themselves and the relationships with themselves as well as with other people, it really encouraged me to work the program as well. Just to start as to, not the very beginning, but the two people who have brought me to these rooms are, one, my dad, the qualifier, who's the alcoholic, and two, my mother, the untreated Al-Anon. After the divorce when I was age 7, my dad was not much in my life afterwards. But my mother she didn't realize how much alcoholism has affected her. And she was the, what I now know as untreated Al-Anon. Everything that I did was just, as most of you have heard, is just like walking on eggshells. There was just no way for me to really please her or for her to feel safe. All she did was become more depressed and also carried a lot more resentments as she continued on with one relationship to the next. Either it is romantic relationships or friendships, to the point that she can no longer trust anyone, not even her own children. I don't believe that liver cancer was the real, technically was the thing that killed her, but in terms of how she was thinking, how distorted and how bad her thinking was, it was Alan who put her in such misery that by the time that she, got liver cancer, she didn't feel that she, wanted to live anymore. She hated herself so much because when she was, raised in a religious background, she was expected to be the perfect wife and perfect mother. But one thing after another, my dad was the alcoholic, the gambling addict, very unfaithful, and she didn't understand that she had no control over these things. It just brought her to a point where that she tried to carry her life, the best that she fit, but she couldn't find that support system or community as I have here. I've only been here for 5 years. Although I've worked the steps twice, 12 steps twice, had two sponsors, but It only humbles me to continue to practice the principles of this program. I'm glad that I am a graduate from it because I know that I always need recovery. And I've learned a lot about myself, which was the best thing ever. I didn't believe that I needed to have a relationship with myself until I got into these rooms. Because my dad was just a person who was dishonest about other people as well as himself. He still denies that he's an alcoholic. He's very abusive. He just doesn't take much responsibility for his own actions. So the male role model that I had growing up was that. It wasn't good. So even though he left, I only knew how to be the complete opposite of that, who that person was. But because my mother was so attached in her codependent relationship that she only tried to cling on to me and help ask me to meet her expectations, which always changed. Her thoughts were just as sick as an alcoholic. So having those two people in my life growing up was very difficult. I turned into myself. I judged myself very harshly. I was self-loathing, self-hatred. I was always anxious and was always depressed because I was always worried about the past, which got me depressed, or got me anxious because I'm always worried about the future because I didn't know how to take care of it, or even if it was my responsibility to do so. When I got into these rooms, it was such a relief. I thought that I was just trying to find relief from alcoholism. But the depth of it is that I truly found a spiritual program. I'm also a so-called religious person who has been to church for many years, who knows God in some shape or form, but in a very abstract and very institutionalized way. It was just based on how other people were doing, and I just followed along what the crowd did. Even looking back right now, most of the people that I've met were not very honest with themselves either. They only spoke about the positive things or how great things are, and they don't really try to look into themselves to see what is there for me to relate to. I mean, I didn't know how to have a relationship with myself, as I said before. So when I came into these rooms, I got to do that, and how I did that was working the entire program, which means going to meetings, reading conference literature, and working with a sponsor. To most of you who are newcomers, you guys are the most important people in this room. I'm not a salesperson. I never will be. Conference-approved literature is not just to be sold to you so then you can pick it up and we can get money off of you. It's not like that. How I view is that I can carry all of the benefits of the program with me everywhere that I go. And I'm just grateful that I have these with me. As I speak about I will provide you with some examples since we are on step 7. And one of the books that I've really loved was from Paths to Recovery. And this is what it says about step 7. Here it says that our higher power can help us remove the criticism while retaining good judgment. That is very deep for me because I wasn't able to break between condemnation and judgment. I always thought that judgment was very negative. But it didn't make sense to me because don't I need to live and survive to have good judgment of character in my relationships? If I don't even have that, in me, then how am I going to relate to other people? The reason why that I couldn't do that is because my thinking was so distorted that I couldn't see the two as different, two different things. And step 7 has helped me to do so. And it showed in step seven is that is to humbly ask God to remove all these defects of character. Humility is something you don't just act. Humility is knowing that you're not perfect. Before coming to these rooms, I always thought that perfectionism is the best policy because I try to strive for that. But it's the most damaging characteristic that I have, is one of my biggest defects of character. It brought me to the point where that, you know, nothing is good enough for me. And that I become very unforgiving of myself, and I project it onto other people without even knowing it. And something else from Paths to Recovery that I'd like to read to you is, our willingness to take action for our own recovery, combined with our willingness to let God remove traits that no longer serve us, give us spiritual muscles to continue our spiritual growth. This is something that's also very important to me because I didn't know that how to take responsibility for myself because I didn't even have a relationship with myself. It tells me that when I focus my attention on myself and not on the alcoholic or all of the chaos outside, I am able to grow spiritually. You can't find these in Bibles or like sermons or all that, but in these rooms you can. And not just that, you're also able to contribute to the collective wisdom, as we call it, because we all have something to contribute, to give. I also learned that self-care is not selfish. Self-care is about knowing that you exist and that you matter. Self-care allows me to know when I am important, because when you're in an alcoholic household, all you focus on is, you know, how to meet other people's expectations, and they always change. And then you never feel good enough, and you don't even know why. In these rooms, I got to learn what it is to have a relationship with myself by just paying attention to my needs and wants, and not just to do whatever other people say, either it's best or worst for me, and also take responsibility for my own actions. This is something that I was able to verbalize. But it's because by attending meetings and just, you know, listening to other people share, you understand the importance of this community. I'm not a really funny person. I never have been. Something that I also learned from Pastor Recovery is. Our distorted, self-destructive thinking, you know, has changed. We try not to waste our time scheming about how to get others to change or worry about matters over which they have no control. This is actually step one, even though it's in step seven, that, you know, I didn't cause it, I didn't control it, and I can't cure it. Alcoholism is something that you need to stay away at all costs if possible. You can't win it. And you also have to give the dignity to the other person to live out their life as you live out your own. It's one of the hardest things for me to do when you see my dad constantly drinking and gambling and doing all sorts of bad things to himself and causing so much pain and misery to other people that he just doesn't care because his worship is the drink. Whoever can give him the money, however he can scheme to get the money, however he can, you know, even if he has to abuse someone to get it, he'll do it. That's how bad alcoholism is. And I was part of that, seeing how my dad would throw chairs at my mom, how she would just, she couldn't do anything. All she could is just try to get the kids out of the house as fast as possible, you know, try to get away from him, whatnot. But because of alcoholism, her self-esteem was so low that she couldn't even ask for the divorce. She just thought that it was the wifely thing to do to keep the family together. And I didn't want to become like that. It was so painful to see that my mother died 4 years ago, that she didn't trust any of her kids. My two sisters and myself would just take care of her needs, and then she becomes depressed. She would still hide it hide it from us when we step away from the hospital room. It's a tragic thing to see, someone who had so vibrant with life, how she probably even enjoyed life, had someone that she thought that she was going to spend the rest of her life with, and then, finding one tragedy after another, and her attitude she couldn't not just stay positive, but she couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. The reason why I'm sharing this to most of you, as even newcomers or families and relatives, is that I don't want any of you to go through what my mom did. This disease, whether you are an untreated Al-Anon or an alcoholic, is deadly. It will kill you like it killed my mom. And it is a very serious matter. And also, I don't want you to also see that program is just something that you do, because program isn't, we just call it program is just because there are ways for you to work on yourself, and has been the most effective. You work the steps, even if you don't even, when you don't even accept God or any type of higher power, you start from one. So then, when you realize that your life is unmanageable, and you can finally realize that, I really have no control over this, I need help. And then you work step two and step three for you to realize that you have to come to believe that a God greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. As I mentioned before, who in the right mind would want to commit suicide even though that their parents were in such great turmoil? I mean, I have my life of my own, but I didn't even realize that because I was so blind by everything. So blind by the chaos growing up, so blind by the hurts by other people, that I didn't even care about my own feelings. Like, those emotions matter because you're human. I treated myself as a robot. All I did was work, do the best I can academically, and be the perfect person in front of people that were never perfect in the first place. Who was I trying to please? Some of the tools that I had from program are some of the abbreviations, like THINK. What helped me to think about what goes on, like whether or not my thinking's distorted or not, is THINK. THINK means, is it thoughtful? Is it honest? Is it intelligent? Is it necessary? Or is it kind? Sometimes we really don't know if we should say something or not say anything at all. At first I thought maybe just not saying anything would be the best policy, so that doesn't hurt anybody's feelings. But at the same time, you don't want to ignore anyone. I'm a person who's not the most talkative person. I think most of you know by now. And I try to just, fit in by, being productive in other ways. And I just wanted, because I just want to be part of the program without, trying to network or something. I think most of you know, from work, there's just so much professional ideologies. The professional ideologies out there are so unstable. It's either the boss you have to mind read, or that mind reading, and you always feel that you have to compete with the other person who's at work in some shape or form, so then you can, either, you know, get up in the, you know, in the corporate ladder, or that you always feel as if you can never be yourself, because that's just what, you know, you, that's what you see every day. If you don't be like that, then you're not going to get anywhere. That's why in these rooms we put professional ideologies outside the doors. I've learned that the more you do that, the more resentment you take in. You're going to resent. You try to be, you know, nice and polite, and, you know, so then you can work every day. But then at home, you know, there's so many like distorted thoughts about how bad your day really was, like how much your coworkers have affected you, how much your boss has treated, how bad or how good your boss has treated you, how much the workload is, you know, how little pay that you get. All of those things just become distractions, and they don't make you grow spiritually, because all you see is just what's in front of you. The materialistic part, I have to pay the bills, you know, I have families to feed. It doesn't, but then like you don't have any room for yourself anymore. But in these rooms, you can really let all things, the reason why that we put these professional ideologies aside is that you don't have to take all these baggages with you into these rooms anymore. The people understand, we all do, because we all work. And it has really made me understand about what gratitude really was. I never been as grateful as I have been now since I've been in Al-Anon. I'm not always like, you know, happy and smiling, but there's a lot of joy in myself. It's because of the people that I've been able to relate to here. People here are so genuine. And, you know, we're all growing, you know, we all have our own way and pace of working the steps for the reason. The reason why we say that is because we, you know, we're all different people. Some, you know, some are gonna, you know, do better than others in certain ways, but we're not competing against anyone, which is completely different from how the workplace works. And you don't have to look over your shoulder because like someone may try to, you know, take advantage of you in some shape or form, because nobody cares here. We all want to, because we just all want to be happy and to live out our lives despite all the chaos and alcoholism that has caused, you know, your life to be before coming into these rooms. One of the most important things that I've learned in step four was detachment. From one of the readings from Courage to Change, it says, detachment is, you know, to own up to what is mine and to give others the dignity to own what is theirs. That's a very important idea of what detachment is. And to me, I've read one from reading from one of my favorite novelists, Dorothy L. Sayers, is that that detachment is a virtue. You're not going to make everybody happy, but those people who still like you in spite of, you know, how rigid you may seem, are actually the people that are people who we value the most. And so even if your loved ones may hate you right now because you're trying to detach from their negative lifestyle, that also means that you've actually gained back some self-esteem. That's very important for us to actually to grow spiritually and to know who you are and what you're capable of. I didn't see myself being capable of anything before coming to these rooms. I graduated. I was an engineer in France. I was in culinary. I went to culinary school in Le Cordon Bleu. I am now a math teacher. But all of these things are just work and things I do. These are not, this is part of me, but it's not everything about me. It's nothing, I don't put this around my neck and like show it off to everyone. I know that I can do these things, but it's more important to work the 12 steps and really work from the inside out. I love the 12 steps, I love the traditions, and I The love is not like, you know, peachy keen, or I think that, you know, that, you know, I would hug it and kiss it or something, no. But what it is that you respect it and know that it's working for you and not against you. It's not, it doesn't condemn you like some biblical texts. It's just, you know, the way it is, and you can work it for yourself as well as how to relate to other people. Because we are so shut off, alcoholism shut us off so much that we no longer know how to be related, truly a person who can relate to other people. Because, like for myself, the way that I project myself before coming to these rooms is that I never thought that I was perfecting. I was like projecting perfectionism, unforgiving nature, or you know, or just you know, self-reliance. Because it's just how I was. But the people who interact with me realize that I have those defects of character without even my even telling them. Because I was just so caught up in myself, of all of the distractions and all the chaos, that I couldn't really just let go. I was able to let go in these rooms. I was able to have my distorted thoughts, not just really analyze them, but break them down to know that, okay, these are bad thoughts, I could ignore them. And I could just focus on, okay, these are the good things that I can say or do that's gonna benefit myself as well as other people. I was able to filter those things by working for the fourth step, doing my fearless moral inventory. Know that it's the fear that's holding me back. Fear of something. Fear of, you know, just a fear of abandonment, fear of just a lot of negative things that, you know, that I just will never have control over. And I could just turn this over to a power greater than myself to restore myself. And that's the value of the 12 steps. The biggest spiritual awakening in these rooms is to realize that God is to be experienced, not to be questioned. It doesn't sound to be very big deal, but if you understand, when you walk into these rooms, whether or not you believe in God or not, you're always questioning Him as His existence, because you don't know what's going to go on, and then you don't know how to experience a higher power. So when you start doing the Bhagavad-gita, you start by just listening to other people's perspectives when they share, and learn that, oh, so this is interesting to me, I can learn from that. Oh, this is also interesting to me, I can learn from that too. Or this is not working for me, I can take away that. You have choices. I didn't feel that I have choices, you know, very at all, because I thought, okay, life is rigid. I have to do well in school, I have to, you know, work very hard, and I have to make a living, and then, you know, just progress like how other people progress. Here, you work, the program is because you're actually working on your life. Of course you're going to work on your own way and pace. That's why nobody pushes you to do anything. And also realize that God is the person who can remove the defects of character, because He's the one who put me with all of my strengths and weaknesses. I have no control over that, and I don't have to. It's such a big belief. If you can just allow His sovereignty to work and not try to, you know, manage everything in your life, you would realize that life is so much simpler. It's not going to be easier. Life is not easy. Your attitude can change, though, how you approach things. And the steps, because you're working on relationships, as well as your relationship with yourself, if you don't even like yourself, how do you expect other people to like you? And that projects to other people, and people notice that. And you have to know where you have to know how to set your boundaries. And you don't set your boundaries rigidly. You just have to know what your part is and not your fault. That's where you begin. And that's part of working the fourth step. And then from there, you just kind of, you know, you just explain the relationships that you have been, and you will see a pattern as to why or haven't they been working for you. I found out that my relationships weren't working for me, unfortunately, is when my mother died. My sisters were all just concerned about how they're going to break up, you know, what mom has left for them, and move on with their lives. And then after the funeral processions, after all that, they disappeared. The reason, and I didn't understand why. I was very frustrated. And I realized that it's because they were carrying so much resentment that they just couldn't face the family anymore. And I was carrying that resentment myself. And because I understand what resentment is, I was able to have compassion for them. I can't control how they live their lives now. I thought that I was able to at least, you know, have a relationship with them that, you know, that was in some way, you know, just at least we can call each other or something, but that's not going to work. It's I have to take my part in saying that I didn't try to, you know, understand who they were, because I didn't even understand myself. And that's why the perspectives, you know, even though they're in this, even though you are living in the same family, the perspectives of how life was being treated to them are completely different from each sibling. And I didn't realize that when I got into these rooms, because I just was angry. My type of anger is not the explosive ones that I tell you off, it implodes. And I've learned to manage it by using one of the tools from the program, HALT. HALT means hungry for H, A for anger, L for lonely, and T for tiredness. You think hungry is not a big deal, but if you understand what hunger really is that are you really actually meeting your own basic needs? If your own basic needs are not met, then your relationship with yourself is in trouble. And if you don't have a good relationship with yourself, then it's really hard for you to really have a long-term relationship with someone else. And until I know that my basic needs are met, then I know that I've taken care of myself. Secondly, as I talked about anger for A is actually, are you managing your stress properly? As most of you know, if you don't manage your stress, your lifespan can shorten at any time. And because that's one way to know that you can take care of yourself. I don't just say, okay, I'm angry now. It's not just an emotional thing. It's knowing that, okay, if I'm actually being that emotional and so, you know, and like, if my voice is elevated or something about me is blinding me, then of course, you know, it's a big red flag and you have to tone it down by taking care of yourself. Otherwise, forget about the relationships that we have. Anyone who's going to care about you if you just all you do is just, you know, fire out all that anger to someone else, even whether they deserve it or not. Remember, you're part of the relationship. You have your part and you have to take care of. L for lonely. At first, it's like how can I feel so lonely? Because you're isolating yourself. In these rooms, because we have a higher power, if you have a relationship with a higher power, of course you're not lonely, because you and God have a relationship. But at the same time, by coming to these rooms and knowing that you have community, look at all these people around you. You know, they understand what you're going through in some shape or form. So you would understand that, okay, then that means that I'm isolating myself and I need to go out there and just, you know, be myself and know that I matter. When I say that I matter, I'm not talking about, well, okay, I'm trying to be territorial. No, what I'm trying to say is that you have to understand that you want people to understand you. You want to let people know where you're coming from. You're not here to network and just try to find someone to vent. That may be part of a relationship that maybe the other person may prefer, but long-term wise, when you ever be able to get someone to know you or you know the other person, highly unlikely. And then T is for tiredness. Well, tired is not just like being just sleepy, because a lot of us, I know, even if we're sleepy, we can still work. We can still do all sorts of things. But I'm talking about the restlessness of you, when you understand yourself with why am I so obsessed with the alcoholic? Why am I so anxious about the alcoholic? Why am I in denial about things? And like, it's just all of these things are causing you to be so restless that you know that your focus is no longer on yourself. So these four checkpoints, H-A-L-T, tells you to stop for a second and understand where you're at this point. These things could just come up anywhere, anytime. It just kind of jumps at you. Because we are people. We have emotions. So then our thoughts will also be, so then we have these spontaneous thoughts that come into it to kind of, you could say, attack you a little bit. But it can really help you to remember to focus on yourself. What I also understand from recovery is that program is just, as I wrap it up a little bit, I acknowledge that that I matter, because I'm no longer thinking about myself as being a martyr. One of the comments that my sisters made before they left my life is that he's a martyr. He thinks that he's perfect. He thinks that he loves mom better than we do. I project that upon them. I have to take responsibility for that. Whether or not I believe it or not, I think I am or not, that doesn't matter. Because you have to remember that you and that person's relationship matters. It's hard, but sometimes that's when you know that you maybe don't understand yourself very well either. And until I came to these rooms, I didn't know that. And also, detached with love. Detached with love means that I'm no longer required to be in a codependent relationship. Because I can recognize that I can love someone else. I don't have to like everything that they do. And I can live my life, you know, outside of that, whether or not it's my wife, whether or not it's my siblings, whether it's my friends. You know, we have boundaries, and you know who you are, and you know how to really take care of yourself. And also, something that I've learned in these rooms is you're as sick as your secrets. As I mentioned before, I had a lot of secrets. I usually don't share all of this stuff to other people. Because it's like, you know, how am I going to know if people are going to judge me? How am I going to know if the person, you know, would care? Or that, you know, isn't it the norm to actually just talk positive about yourself and then hide all that stuff in the car underneath the rug? So then everything is just, you know, fine and dandy in the outside. So then no one has to really worry about you. Because nobody really wants to take in a lot of negative stuff that you tell people. But how is that really working for you? I mean, you're not happy, and then you always think that there's always going to be some chaos you have to take care of. You're resentful. You just completely not like yourself when things don't work out the way that you think it would, and that's perfectionism. All of those things can be removed in its own time when you know that you're only as sick as the secrets. And everybody here, especially the men here coming to these meetings, because they're so honest with themselves, I've learned to be very self-honest with myself. Because I know that what they share comes from the heart. And it's not just something they just blur out just to, just for your attention. For the newcomers, I also want you to know that the reason why when you go to meetings and you see that, you know, people start with my name is like myself, my name is Sunny, it's not because we want you to know us. We just want you to not to forget yourself. You are important, and you always have to remember that you matter. And once you walk into the meetings, you start working program. It's a very natural thing. It's not forced. It's at first you may seem it's not very natural, like even hugs from another person. But you don't realize that, wow, I actually have that emotional need to be cared for. And a hug really matters. The longer they understand that other people really have your best interest at heart. In the workplace, you never know who that is. I've had a lot of struggles myself because I've worked different jobs in different fields, corporate, culinary, education, tons of gossip. It's just, it never ends. You feel that as if you're drowning all the time. And then one person may just change one way or another, you never know. They don't even, when I go into church and have some people reading to me, they really don't have any set principles at all. They have none. So can you imagine the alcoholic has any principles? They also have none, because all they care about is the drink. So that's why we have to practice the principles of the program in our lives, starting from focusing on you. Something that I also wanted to share is that is to live in the present. My mind, you may be here present, kind of like work, you're there and you're doing your job and everything, but are you really present sometimes? Face it, right? Because it's routine, day in, day out, you already know what to expect, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, but your mind is usually, either thinking about the past or worrying about the future. So you either get depressed about the past or you become anxious about the future. And you just don't, and you don't feel, you don't really feel what you're doing at the moment. But when you have a relationship with a higher power, you know that you can speak to him one-on-one, and you can do it all the time. So you know that you're present. Prayer is for you to speak to God, and meditation is for you to listen to him. It's that simple. And meditation is just for you to, not get distracted from daily routines and know that he's there and he has some shape or form speaking to you. And it's not always, words. It's an experience. It's by the people who may share something that you really think that has really helped you. Or in some moments in time where, maybe the beauty of nature, maybe it's just at the moment that, you feel something that caused you to be very happy and free. Those are experiences. And those are some things that you will have when you, really understand the program. And one of the great things about here in these rooms is that, as I mentioned about work and professional ideologies, is that I don't have to mind read. Sometimes I feel like as if at work I still have to mind read my boss, because I have to make sure that, am I on the same page with him? Am I on his good side? So I can remain, at least part of the workforce without being neglected. But here in these rooms, mind reading is prohibited. Isn't it a good thing? It's so freeing that it's like, why do you want to mind read? It's just, because your focus is on someone else when you mind read. You're not focusing on yourself. And then when things become chaotic, you're just focusing on the chaos. You don't feel safe. There's no sense of security. And not just sanity is important, serenity is also very important in the Al-Anon program. You can't find the peace, the inner peace that you want without serenity. And you have to turn things over to things, especially that you have no control over, to someone that is in control all the time. And someone that only he can take care of you when things are just, because you just don't know what the future holds. You think that you can control it, but you can't. Things change so much in this world. Sometimes your health would change, sometimes your family, but people would change out of nowhere. Like my life, you know, like both of my father right now recently had heart failure, and he had colon cancer, and he's been in treatment for 5 years, and he still drinks, and he still gambles, and he still does what he feels is right. But I have no relationship with him. I am just very grateful to be here because I'm able to share a very important, you know, moment in my life with you for these for this short period of time. And I really wish the best for all of you, because I know that it's not easy dealing with what you're dealing with. And but you do have a choice to live the life that you want, as well as having the relationships that you deserve. So thank you for letting me share.
Great. Let's give him another hand. Thank you, Sonny. Okay. Okay.